Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies are so iconic that I just say Famous Amos and it's like I can taste it. Each cookie is filled with semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch. And the word satisfying is very key there because some cookies are crunchy and brittle, and I don't like that. But Famous Amos has a deep, tooth-sinkable, satisfying crunch that I know and love. And Famous Amos classic bite-sized chocolate chip cookies are bringing back the original recipe that everyone knows and loves. One perfect bite, everything classic in a cookie. Find Famous Amos cookies anywhere you buy your favorite snacks. This episode contains explicit language.
I debunked the story of Glenn Bell and how he got the idea for Taco Bell. I debunked the story of Doritos. I blew apart the claim by Taco John's, the fast food taco chain based in Wyoming, who has a trademark to Taco Tuesday. I destroyed Taco John's claim by going into the archives and telling the true story of the term Taco Tuesday. I live for these things. But when it came to this one, I just couldn't cast doubt on it. It was just too good of a feel-good story. I assumed it was real. How could it not be real?
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. The person you just heard is Gustavo Arellano. He's a columnist at the LA Times and author of the book Taco USA, How Mexican Food Conquered America. For years, he's been obsessed with finding the stories of Mexicans and Mexican-Americans who haven't gotten credit for the foods they introduced, foods that have become part of American culture. And there was one food in particular that I wanted to talk to him about. I ate Flamin' Hot Cheetos for the first time today.
What? All these years later.
I know. But, you know, look, as a consummate journalist, I felt it was my obligation to eat some before I spoke to you. And I thought they were amazing. I mean, huh. They were really good.
What did you like about them?
I mean, they were spicy to my palate.
Sure.
But sweet, salty, in a way that just made me want to keep eating them. Like, I've eaten my share of Takis. The spicy Takis to me are just like painfully sharp. There's something about them that's just too hot.
That's what makes them so good. I like the Takis because they have the sharpness of the heat, but also they have that layer of citrus, you know, like the lime flavor to it that makes them almost tart because they're so sharp on that.
Yes.
But for me, Flaming Hot Cheetos, it's flavorful. Don't get me wrong. It's not spicy at all. I've never understood people who say, oh, Flaming Hot Cheetos, it burns me. Or like, I have never seen it. Then again, I'm a Mexican. We're used to this level of spice.
Tell me about the first time you ate a Flamin' Hot Cheeto.
I can't even remember because, look, I'm a Doritos man, okay? So if you're a Mexican, it doesn't matter what the flavor is. You have to put hot sauce on it, whether Tapatio, Valentina, some Tabasco in a pinch. And the Doritos, the way the hot sauce cascades across the chips, or the Doritos chips, it gives it a nice, even flavor.
I would probably take regular Cheetos over regular Doritos because of the crunch. Not just more overall crunch, but I like that there's different size and shape pieces in the Cheetos, so you get variation from one bite to the next.
Cheetos, I always like Cheetos. They're a little bit cheesier, but they just didn't have that crunch that Doritos have.
It shocks me, Gustavo, that you would say you like Doritos better than Cheetos because Doritos are crunchier. Like, I feel like Doritos kind of have a brittle crunch, but Cheetos have like a deep down base kind of crunch that just rocks me.
I don't know. I grew up with them. So I think you always associate what's wonderful and great with your childhood. I put more significance to the first time I ate Cool Ranch Doritos than I ever did Flaming Hot Cheetos. Maybe I'm a weirdo like that, but also because that's what happened when I was a kid.
Clearly, Gustavo and I could debate Cheetos versus Doritos versus Takis all day. I take his point. The snacks of your childhood stick with you into adulthood. And for a generation of kids who grew up in the late 90s and 2000s, that snack was Flamin' Hot Cheetos. It was one of the first mainstream snack foods that was marketed as spicy. Flamin' Hot Cheetos were a hit when they launched and just got more and more popular over the years. Kids began competing to see who could survive eating more of the spicy snack. And that competition created a sort of moral panic.
Spicy, flaming, hot. That's the name of the game when it comes to chips.
The snack is wildly popular with kids with its own Facebook fan page.
School districts in California and New Mexico are trying to ban them.
Right here in Central Texas, these fiery favorites are sending dozens of kids to the emergency room.
If it's hot and spicy, it's going to stay hot and spicy the whole way it goes through your system.
These kids will eat, you know,
just a ridiculous amount of the Flaming Hot Cheetos. And then they'll realize their stool is red.
What would happen to me if I ate this whole bag?
You might have the runs. And booty might be burning.
Lots of kids got the runs, as in they kept running right back to the store to get more. In 2019, Adweek reported that Flamin' Hot Cheetos was the nation's favorite snack brand for the third year in a row. And there's one place where it's especially beloved. Southern California.
It's like an extremely popular SoCal thing. There's tons of places where you can get like a Flamin' Hot Cheetos burrito or quesadilla in LA.
This is Sam Dean.
Yeah, I'm Sam Dean. I'm a business reporter at the LA Times.
Sam's right. At Loco Lotes in downtown L.A., you can get the El Diablo Elote covered in hot Cheeto dust. The Attic, a restaurant in Long Beach, serves mac and Cheetos, a mac and cheese spiked with hot Cheetos. The low-key poke joint, with locations in Riverside and Garden Grove, serves hot Cheetos-encrusted poke wraps.
You go to like a street fair and people are selling like Flamin' Hot Cheeto bag pillows. Like, it's just like a phenom.
Gustavo says there's a reason why this snack has been an especially big hit in this region.
In Southern California, the majority of the school kids now are Latinos. You see something spicy. You've been conditioned to a lifetime of just cheese flavor, of Cool Ranch flavor, whatever the hell Cool Ranch is. So now all of a sudden you realize, oh, there's something spicy. And so subliminally, it's like, oh, I'm seeing myself. My culture is represented in this Flaming Hot Cheetos. You embrace them. You teach the next generation, hey, this is our chip. This is our snack. And then once you start getting older, you start hearing this rumor. Oh, did you know that a Mexican janitor invented Flaming Hot Cheetos?
That former janitor is Richard Montañez.
Richard Montañez.
Richard Montañez.
The godfather of Hispanic branding, Mr. Richard B. Montañez.
He invented the Hot Flaming Cheetos!
He was born and raised in the agricultural town of Ontario, California. His parents worked the fields, picking grapes. In 2014, he spoke at an award ceremony for the League of United Latin American Citizens.
And I remember one day, a neighbor said, hey, they're hiring at Frito-Lay. I said, Frito-Lay? Oh, what if I could get a job there? What if I can change the destiny for the Montañez family? Maybe we don't have to work the fields anymore if I can get into that, a real job.
It's the late 70s. Richard is 19, and he lands that job at Frito-Lay as a janitor in the Rancho Cucamonga plant. It's just a few miles from where he grew up.
And I remember I went home and I told my dad and my grandfather. You know what they told me? When you mop that floor, don't forget that you are a Montañez. Let that floor shine.
As Richard tells it, after a decade working at Frito-Lay, he sees a video, a message to employees from the new CEO, Roger Enrico. Here's Sam Dean again.
Roger Enrico sent out a video telling all the people working at the company to just act like owners, take ownership of the company, and, you know, come up with their own ideas, come up with ways to improve everything. You know, I think it was based on the kind of like Toyota Kaizen model of continuous improvement. You know, it was a real big like 80s kind of business thing, letting frontline workers take over.
When Richard sees that video, he feels like the CEO is talking directly to him. After 10 years as a janitor, Richard's eager to move up the ranks. As he writes in his memoir, he's always looking for ways to prove himself, to show he can do more than just mop floors. He starts taking shifts in the production line, learning how the different machines work. He creates a new ultra-thin chip that he pitches to the R&D team, but they turn him down. Richard keeps at it. On his day off, he decides to ride along with one of the warehouse drivers who delivers chips in the area. And the last stop is Richard's local grocery store. He notices that the chip rack, where Frito-Lay has their Ruffles and Lay's and Cheetos, it's right next to the section with the Mexican spices, like chili powder, cumin, paprika, and cayenne pepper. Here's Richard talking on the podcast, The Passionate Few.
And I saw all these spices, and then I looked at our products and like, we didn't really have a lot of spices.
Richard thinks to himself, Frito-Lay should be using these spices in their chips. A week later, he's leaving the grocery store and he sees an elote vendor. Elote, of course, Mexican grilled corn. Richard buys an elote. It's covered in butter, cotija cheese, cilantro, and chili powder.
So I took a bite, and when I looked at it, it was like, this looks like a Cheeto.
And that's when he says it hits him.
What would happen if I put chile on a Cheeto?
Richard gets to work. He knows that at the plant, there are often leftover tubs of unseasoned Cheetos that get thrown out. So he brings home a garbage bag full of naked Cheetos and sets up a food lab in his kitchen. The whole family gets into it. They start with a salsa that Richard's wife makes at home, and they begin tweaking the ingredients and proportions. They create a makeshift tumbler using a plastic bag meant for roasting a turkey, and they keep fine-tuning the recipe. They figure out that spraying the Cheetos with oil first helps the seasoning stay on the chip. Richard even comes up with a name, Flamin' Hot Cheetos. He thinks he's got a great idea, and he believes the CEO's words that he should act like an owner. Here's Richard giving another speech in 2014 at the Latino Leaders Network.
So I did what any typical Latino janitor would do, is I called up the CEO.
He pitches his idea for a spicy Cheeto to CEO Roger Enrico.
And this is what he said. I'll be in Cucamonga in 2 weeks, Richard.
That means Richard will have a chance to give an official pitch for this new snack. The day comes, and as Richard tells it, the boardroom is filled with high-level executives, product developers, and lots of plant workers. Over 100 people are there, including the CEO. Richard's worked at the plant for years, but he's never given this kind of presentation. He's nervous. But he gets up in front of the group and tells the story of going to the grocery store, seeing the Mexican spices, eating elote, and getting his inspiration. He even pulls out an elote from under the podium and takes a bite. Everyone's laughing, and they seem excited about this new product. At the end, one of the top execs asks, "How much market share are we talking about?" Richard doesn't know what to say. He freezes up. But then, a vision comes to him.
You know, when you go to the store, the supermarket, what they're called gondolas, when you see all the chips?
Richard opens his arms wide, like he's reaching around all the chip racks, the gondolas. And he says,
"That much market share."
Then Roger Enrico, the CEO, gets up and opens his arms too, just as wide as Richard's. And Roger says,
"Ladies and gentlemen, do you realize that we have the opportunity to go after that much market share?"
Roger Enrico is sold. Frito-Lay starts developing Flamin' Hot Cheetos. Richard says they even base the spice blend on the one he and his wife developed in their home kitchen. Richard gets promoted to machine operator at the plant, but in his spare time, he's advocating for Flamin' Hot Cheetos and pushing for a whole line of Flamin' Hot products. Finally, 10 years after pitching Flamin' Hot Cheetos, he gets promoted to corporate manager. A few years later, he becomes a vice president at PepsiCo, who owns Frito-Lay. Richard begins telling his story at company events and then more widely as a motivational speaker. And he turns it into a story about inspiration and perseverance, about climbing the corporate ladder from janitor to executive.
Young people, I want to tell you today, you don't need anybody's permission to become great. And if you feel you need somebody's permission, well, I'm here to give it to you today. You have my permission to be great.
Richard's story goes viral. Upworthy posts about it with the headline, "The Incredible Tale of How a Frito-Lay Janitor Pitched His Billion-Dollar Idea to the CEO." He appears in a BuzzFeed listicle titled, 12 Super Interesting Facts You'll Want to Read If You Fucking Love Cheetos. Earlier this year, Richard's memoir is published by Penguin Random House, and he consults on a biopic based on his life, directed by Eva Longoria and distributed by Fox Searchlight, a division of Disney. I should mention, we reached out to Richard multiple times, but he didn't respond to our request for an interview. While his story has been shared far and wide, according to Gustavo Arellano, it really strikes a chord with Southern California's Latino community.
And you think, wow, that's really cool. One of us did that. Like, that's awesome. And so it just becomes embedded specifically with Mexican-American culture, but Latinos at large also embrace that as one of their own, even if you're not a Mexican or Chicano. It's like, oh, cool. Like, one of our cousins invented this chip that speaks to us. That's awesome. Of course, we're going to love it even more, con más gusto, like with more joy.
After the break, twist in the story of Richard Montañez.
Early 2020, we get an anonymous tip from someone saying, hey, this is fishy. You know, you should look into it more and try to talk to people who were there at the time.
That's coming up. Stick around.
Time to cook up some advertisements.
Norwegian Cruise Line breaks the boundaries of global cruise travel. When you cruise with NCL, you're going to get award-winning specialty restaurants, a variety of food and beverage offerings, immersive entertainment, and the most thrilling experiences at sea. It is first class. These ships have all kinds of specialty restaurants: Brazilian steakhouse, French, Spanish, Italian, Japanese, Mexican. Select ships also feature al fresco dining on the waterfront and Ocean Boulevard, an oceanside promenade lined with bars and restaurants. Norwegian provides guests with truly authentic and fresh dining and bar experiences complemented by exceptional service. Almost everything you'll eat is prepared from scratch by highly experienced chefs. And they got whatever you're going to be in the mood for. You want a quick casual family meal? They've got that. You want a beautiful four-course feast? They've got that too. And you can sip something delicious at one of up to 23 unique bar and lounge options per ship. Visit and explore exciting destinations around the world and enjoy unique experiences on board. With no set dining and entertainment times and no formal dress codes, you have the flexibility to design your ideal vacation. Book your next adventure at ncl.com. Recently, I went into my closet to try to get a collared shirt out, and it occurred to me that I don't think I have bought a new collared shirt in 5 years. I mean, every shirt in there was either really old, or it had some kind of perma-stain situation, or it probably never fit right in the first place. I gotta freshen up a little bit here. It's time for something new, right? And spring is coming. Now is the time if you've been looking to refresh your wardrobe, home, or skincare and beauty routines this season. Because, you know, Walmart has genuinely surprising style finds that don't break the bank. This spring, there's only one destination for the latest fashion, home, and beauty inspired by real life. Walmart. I freshened up my wardrobe. I got some nice dress shirts, a couple light hoodies. You know, you need light hoodies for the springtime. Very useful, very comfortable. Discover surprisingly stylish new season favorites at Walmart now, or shop it all on the Walmart app. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending. Now trending, your style at Walmart. This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. We have a dog. Her name is Sasha. She's almost four. She's a standard poodle. She's black and fluffy and soft and very adorable. And when we first got her, we took her to like this puppy kindergarten training class. The whole family went, and you know, they're teaching how to use the treats and all this. The trainer watched Sasha for a bit and said, she's very food motivated. And my daughter Emily turned to me and said, she's a Pashman. And so she is food motivated. And that's why we make a point of feeding Sasha high quality pet food. Founded in Hereford, Texas, Merrick has been crafting high-quality dog food for over 30 years. Real is Merrick's recipe, so they always use deboned meat, fish, or poultry as the number one ingredient. And let me tell you something. When it's dinner time, Sasha is motivated, okay? She is highly motivated to come in from patrolling the backyard at dinner, to get up off the couch, whatever she's doing, she will drop it and come running. Check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it. I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third-generation, family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about $10 a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. Hey, on last week's show, I talked with Anthony Porosky. Yes, the one and only food expert from Queer Eye. But he wasn't the obvious choice for that role. He's not a chef, and he has no formal culinary training. So when the show debuted in 2018, a lot of people asked, can this guy actually cook?
It's literally the worst thing you could possibly hear when you're already thinking that about yourself. And then you have people who are saying that. And all you see, like all I saw was that. I took out all of the good and I just like focused in on all of the bad, and it made me miserable.
In the years since, Anthony's gone back and forth between trying to prove his haters wrong and trying to stop worrying about what other people think. He tells me where he's at now. Plus, he shares his secrets for a good salad and his hot takes on pierogies. It's really a great conversation. Check it out up now wherever you got this one. Okay, back to the show. So Sam Dean, the reporter from the LA Times we heard from earlier, gets an anonymous tip. Someone says to him, "You know that story about Richard Montañez? Well, I know how Flamin' Hot Cheetos were really invented." Sam's in LA. He knows what a big deal Flamin' Hot Cheetos are. So he decides to look into it.
You know, the first things we usually do is just a quick, LexisNexis archive search. This is very boring.
We'll run some music under this part, Sam, where it's like intense detective, hot on the trail, journalism, going to break the big story like in the movies. We'll add that in, yeah. And then this is all going to sound very exciting. Go on. LexisNexis, hit it.
Well, yeah. So you look up the historical stuff. We saw there's all this stuff about Flamin' Hot Cheetos in the early 90s. And there's this very quickly we found this article that was just like PR person for Frito-Lay in 92 saying, yeah, they came out of our, northern division in Chicago and we rolled them out this year.
Sam starts digging deeper, talking to people who were working in Frito-Lay's northern division at the time. And he finds a very different origin story than the one that Richard Montañez has been telling.
So it starts with, this guy, Fred Lindsay, in the field and his coworkers who are working all the time on the up and down the street market, which is like liquor stores, corner stores, gas stations, stuff like that.
At the time, Fred Lindsay was a Frito-Lay salesman from the south side of Chicago.
And they see that other companies' spicy projects are just doing really well. They're getting beat at the corner stores by these spicy things. People aren't buying Frito-Lay stuff.
So Fred says to the marketing department,
"We just need something spicy to compete. We're leaving money on the table. People love this. We're a giant company. We can do it too."
In 1989, Frito-Lay assigns the project to Lynn Greenfeld, a new employee at their headquarters in Plano, Texas. She visits small stores in the Midwest, works with the product design teams on branding and the flavor mix, basically every element of this new snack.
And she, in her recollection and some of her coworkers, says that she came up with the name Flamin' Hot. She was like, "That sounds good." And then she got sign-off from a bunch of her bosses.
Sam spoke to 20 people who worked in product development for Frito-Lay in the 90s. And the consensus was, that's where Flamin' Hot Cheetos came from. A salesman in the Midwest pitched the idea, and a junior employee at headquarters in Texas developed it. Sam's reporting also cast doubt on the famed meeting where Richard pitched the idea of Flamin' Hot Cheetos to CEO Roger Enrico. Enrico came to Frito-Lay in 1991. At that point, Flamin' Hot Cheetos had already been in development for 6 months. Patty Roof, Roger Enrico's secretary, has said publicly that she does remember a phone call between Roger Enrico and Richard Montañez, either in 92 or 93. She also says Roger did take a trip to the Cucamonga plant and did specifically ask to meet Richard. But by the time they met, Flamin' Hot Cheetos were already being sold in Southern California.
I don't think that the CEO of a company would get a pitch for something that already exists and say, "Wow, great idea. We should talk about it."
Roger Enrico died in 2016, and Sam couldn't find any instance of him commenting about the origins of Flamin' Hot Cheetos. Of the former Frito-Lay staffers he talked to who worked in product development, none of them recall a meeting like that happening except one, Al Carey. He was a Frito-Lay exec at the time and was a mentor to Richard for decades. Richard and Al have made public appearances together, and Al says that a pitch meeting did happen, that Richard pitched a spicy snack aimed at the Latino market. But Al also says that CEO Roger Enrico wasn't in that meeting. But as Richard rises up the ranks and starts telling his story of inventing Flamin' Hot Cheetos, what's Frito-Lay saying?
So Frito-Lay doesn't say much. Executives back him up, say that, "Oh, yes, Richard is the guy who invented this. He's a great asset to us." But it seems like it's a lot of his own self-promo, as far as I can tell. But Frito-Lay doesn't say much. They just kind of let it grow.
Were they aware internally at the time that he's going around telling the story that it wasn't true?
By the time he starts telling the story in the, publicly, most of the people who worked on it are gone. And then it seems like there's a lot of other people at the company who genuinely just think it's true. It's like they started working there in 2008. They don't know what happened 20 years ago. Like, sure, why not?
But eventually, the people who worked on Flamin' Hot Cheetos did hear Richard's story. Lynn Greenfeld stumbled on it in 2018. She wasn't at Frito-Lay anymore, but she contacted the company about it. That triggered an internal investigation. Sam uncovered emails from that process that show Frito-Lay lawyers confirming Lynn Greenfeld's account. But Frito-Lay did not make these findings public. So Richard Montañez was still telling his story when Sam got that tip. Sam knew he had a compelling story on his hands, but he wanted to run an early draft by Gustavo. The two are colleagues at the LA Times.
And so I asked him, just, do you think I should do this? I'm a white guy. This is a thing that a lot of Latino people love, especially in Southern California. Is this worth doing?
And he says...
He says, yeah. I mean, he basically says, go for it.
For me, it was like, oh my God, Sam has stumbled upon something that's just going to blow away people's minds, and we better be careful.
Why should you be careful?
Because people were going to be mad.
There are a few reasons why people were likely to be mad. Yes, Flamin' Hot Cheetos and their backstory were beloved parts of Latino culture in the area. But also, the LA Times has a history when it comes to covering Latino issues.
The LA Times was, for many decades, a basically right-wing newspaper. Has run a lot of racist stuff about Latino people in the LA area. So the LA Times does not have a great reputation among Latino readers.
Last year, Gustavo wrote an entire column about this, pointing out many of the racist ways that the LA Times has covered Latinos in California. In the 1940s, they published columns celebrating the Zoot Suit Riots, where American servicemen beat Latinos in the streets. In the 70s, the Times published a series about Central American refugees. The headline of the lead article read, "Illegal aliens are winning the beachhead for the third world." In the 90s, the Times endorsed the re-election of Governor Pete Wilson, who campaigned on a state ballot initiative that would bar undocumented Californians from accessing public services. So this past May, when Sam Dean's story was published in the LA Times, many people were reading it with that context in mind. Within a few hours of the article going live,
people are saying, like, really, LA Times, when so much crap is, so much shit is going in Southern California, that's misguided principles, misguided opportunity. Fuck this. Fuck Sam Dean. Sam Dean's a white man. How dare he take down a Mexican? The LA Times, just another example of hating on Mexicans. Trash. It became a dumpster fire very, very quickly.
One letter to the editor called Richard a hero in the Latino community and said that Sam is, quote, not part of the culture in which this story is something of a modern legend. Others said, with everything going on, why would the LA Times put so much effort into a piece that takes down a Mexican-American icon? For Sam and the LA Times, this was a business story about one of the biggest public companies in the world.
On a corporate level, like, Frito-Lay should not be able to cover itself in glory as this place that let this janitor create this product that changed the world, when it didn't. It was a normal kind of boring corporate process, and you shouldn't get a little rosy glow when you eat a bag of Flamin' Hot Cheetos when it's not deserved.
But there were still other criticisms of Sam's story. One letter to the editor said, you attack a Latino who actually did rise up the ranks, even though it may or may not have been exactly the way he said. This was a theme in a lot of the backlash. Yeah, maybe the story isn't totally true, but can't we just have this one? After all, white people rip off Latino food culture all the time. Some people pointed to the history at Frito-Lay in particular. In the 1930s, Charles Doolin bought the patent for Fritos from a Mexican gas station vendor in San Antonio, which is where the whole chip empire began. For decades, Doolin was celebrated as the creator of Fritos. Wasn't until the 1980s that the originator of the chip was named. Texas Monthly tracked him down in Oaxaca. His name was Gustavo Holguin. Another example, Doritos.
The way Frito-Lay would tell it, that one of their executives, a man named Arch West, in the 1960s, he went somewhere to the wrong side of the tracks and goes to a Mexican restaurant and gets this snack, basically tortilla chips with cheese, like cheese dust on them. And then he goes back to Frito-Lay's and invents Doritos like that. As it turns out, it's a Mexican family, the Morales family, who had the commissary contract at Disneyland. They're the ones who invented Doritos. When I told that story of the Morales family, it had never been told before in the media. I looked through everywhere, all the newspaper clippings, never until I was able to tell it.
So Doritos are more Mexican or Mexican-American than Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Sure, 1,000%. I mean, by virtue of birth, absolutely. Doritos were invented by a Mexican family.
So the reactions to Sam's story weren't just about the story. It was about a long history. That's why it touched a nerve. And Gustavo understands that history as well as anyone. Still, as far as Flamin' Hot Cheetos is concerned,
what I would say in response is, the truth is the truth. I'm sorry. Maybe my reporter glasses blinds me to my allegiance, to any allegiance I'm supposed to have to my people, whoever the hell my people are. But truth is truth.
To be clear, much of Richard Montañez's story is true. He was a janitor who worked his way up to an executive. He did pitch spicy snacks aimed at the Latino market, some of which ended up in stores, including a chip called Sabrasitas. One person Sam talked to who worked on Sabrasitas said Richard's role in the creation of that snack was almost exactly what Richard claims he did for Flamin' Hot Cheetos. Frito-Lay's parent company, PepsiCo, eventually acknowledged that Richard's story about inventing Flamin' Hot Cheetos wasn't true. They told Sam, quote, "We value Richard's many contributions to our company, especially his insights into Hispanic consumers. But we do not credit the creation of Flamin' Hot Cheetos or any Flamin' Hot products to him." They called the story an urban legend. After the backlash to the article, PepsiCo issued another statement, which reads in part, "We attribute the launch and success of Flamin' Hot Cheetos and other products to several people who worked at PepsiCo, including Richard Montañez." But the statement still did not give Richard credit for inventing Flamin' Hot Cheetos. When we reached out to PepsiCo for comment, they sent us the same statement and didn't respond to follow-up questions. And again, Richard Montañez did not respond to our repeated requests for an interview. But the day that the LA Times story was published, Richard posted a video on Instagram.
You got to remember this. I don't care what room you're in. There's always somebody in the room that's going to try to steal your destiny. They may even say you never existed. I want you to do this. Write down your history, because if you don't, somebody else will.
He also gave an interview to Variety in which he says he never documented his work and that Frito-Lay eventually cut him out of the process for developing Flamin' Hot Cheetos. All this news broke just as production was wrapping on Flamin' Hot, the film about Richard's life. Frito-Lay was involved in the production, according to emails Sam obtained. But once his article came out,
Frito-Lay now has said that they've cut ties with the movie, will not be supporting it.
But Sam is skeptical. After all, the film is based on a Frito-Lay product.
The fact that they're prominently showing the product name in the movie means that Frito-Lay is still backing it.
Well, it'll be interesting, you know, like you often see movie trailers that'll say based on a true story, inspired by a true story, inspired by real events.
Right.
There's different sort of like phrases that they use, I think, depending on how much poetic license they've taken.
There's a great article, one of the follows that after my piece published was a Variety story about the movie, and the screenwriter, I think his line was, "It's true enough." he was like, "As far as I'm concerned, it's true enough."
That's Sam Dean, business reporter at the LA Times. You also heard Gustavo Arellano, a columnist for the LA Times and author of the book Taco USA, How Mexican Food Conquered America. We'll have a link to Sam's article and Gustavo's column on Flamin' Hot Cheetos on our show page at Sporkful.com. Coming up next week, I talk with the one and only Padma Lakshmi. I first had her on the show here in 2016, and, you know, she was already a big star then. Now she's become more outspoken on issues of representation and diversity in the food world. So I talk with her about that evolution, and she tells me why, despite all her success, she struggled to find someone to make her show taste the nation. That's next week. In the meantime, make sure you check out last week's episode with Anthony Porofsky, the food expert from Queer Eye, who tells me about how he dealt with being an early target of criticism on the show. This show is produced by me, along with senior producer
Emma Morgenstern
and producer
Andres O'Hara.
Our editor is
Tracy Samuelson.
The show is mixed by
Jared O'Connell.
Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Peter Clowney and Daisy Rosario. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
This is Paul from Escovina, California, reminding you to eat more, eat better, eat more better.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium-iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.